Magandang umaga and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, EJ David, joining you from Digayakuk, the lands of the Dena'ina. Today, we will talk about racism against Asians and Asian Americans. With emerging data showing that incidents of anti-Asian racism have increased 150% over the past year, along with recent tragic events throughout the country, like the murders in Atlanta and Indianapolis, a spotlight has been shed on anti-Asian racism. Many Americans seem shocked and surprised that it's happening. But is anti-Asian racism new? Is anti-Asian racism rare? What does it look like? Where does it happen? Does anti-Asian racism happen in Alaska? And how does it impact Asian Americans, a group composed of many different people with different cultures, histories, religions, and worldviews? Today, we have two guests joining us to help us with our discussion on anti-Asian racism. The first is Nithya Theroux. Nithya was born and raised in Anchorage. While in high school, she developed a love of storytelling as an Alaska Teen Media Institute producer. She later went on to work as the news, sports, and public affairs director for KRUA 88.1 FM at the University of Alaska Anchorage, where she graduated with a BA in history. She recently completed her master's of public administration in human rights and gender policy at Columbia University. Growing up among immigrant communities in Anchorage, she has witnessed the power of storytelling to bring folks together and create spaces for both healing and joy. Nithya is now the executive director of StoryWorks Alaska. Good morning, Nithya.
Good morning, EJ.
Salamat. Thanks for joining us today. Also joining us this morning is Joshua Albeza Brandstetter. He is a Filipino-American filmmaker and photographer living in Anchorage. He has received international acclaim for his documentary work, with a focus on themes of cultural reclamation, personal identity, and social justice. He founded Brandstetter Film in 2016 with a vision of telling courageous Alaskan stories with authenticity and intimacy. Josh received a 2020 Rasmussen Fellowship for his work with Absolute Zero, a multidisciplinary arts team uplifting survivors of abuse throughout Alaska. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, EJ and Nithya.
Salama, thank you for joining us this morning. In addition to the many things Nithya and Josh are involved in, as I mentioned in the intros, both of them are also founding members of ACAPITA, or Alaskan, Asian, Pacific Islander, and Desi American Community Organization. ACAPITA is a group that connects and empowers Asian, Pacific Islander, and Desi American Alaskans through dialogue, civic engagement, and direct action in solidarity with Alaska's diverse communities. You can find them on Facebook by searching ACAPITA, A-K-A-P-I-D-A. And to our listeners, you can join the conversation too. Do you have thoughts about anti-Asian racism? Have you experienced anti-Asian racism yourself? You can call us at 1-888-353-5752, or if you're in Anchorage, you can call at 550-8433. You can also reach us by email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. All right, so let's begin. Over the past year, as I mentioned earlier, there has been a rise on anti-Asian racism throughout the country. So, Nithya, let's start with you. Many Americans seem to be surprised with the fact that Asians experience racism. But is anti-Asian racism a new or even rare phenomenon?
Yeah, thank you for that question, EJ. I kind of just want to start by saying that, you know, for me, I want to speak from my own experience and not necessarily speak to the experience of an entire community. But I know that we can also talk quite a bit about kind of, you know, the general history of Asians in the United States and those experiences as well. And just right off the bat, I want to say, no, it's not a new experience, and it's definitely not a rare experience either. And I think we'll continue to talk about this throughout our time together about the experiences that Josh and I have had here in Alaska, but there is a long legacy and history of anti-Asian racism going back to very early history in the United States. So thinking about things like the Chinese Exclusion Act, Japanese internment, a lot of, throughout the Cold War, a lot of anti-Asian sentiment throughout that. And of course, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, but, you know, there's a huge diversity of Asian experience. And so for myself, I'm a South Asian person who comes from Ilam, which is the northeast region of the island just under India, known as Sri Lanka. And so, that experience is going to be very different from, for example, a Korean-American's experience of racism in this country. But it's definitely true that across the board, I think communities have been experiencing racism here for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Nithya. Josh, do you have something to add?
Yes. I also would like to focus, especially on my lived experience as an Asian-American man living in Alaska, but this is nothing new. What's been in the news and what we've had so much of a focus on is heartbreaking, but this is part of a long history. As Nithya mentioned, all the way back from the Chinese Exclusion Act to Manila Town in California, in which Filipino workers were restricted to staying in the neighborhoods, and that Filipino men were attacked when they were seen with white women. In the 80s, when Japanese people were blamed for the economic concerns in the 80s, and all the way up to the murder of Vincent Chin, who was a Chinese American man, by two white workers who had lost their factory jobs in Michigan. And the first man who was killed after 9/11 here in America from a hate crime was a South Asian man. I think the things that have been dominating the news are heartbreaking, but not surprising.
Yeah, thank you both for bringing that up, both touching on the long history of it going back to the Chinese Exclusion Act, but also pointing out that this is, that anti-Asian racism is not just a thing of the past, but it's also a thing of our recent history in this country, right? And you both have given some examples of that. Our recent memory, for example, there's the Sikh temple shooting in 2012. That was quite recent. In 2017, for example, in Kansas, two Asian Indian men were shot by a white man who yelled, "Get out of my country." And that received some media attention as well. And then, of course, since the 9/11 attacks, South Asian Americans leading together, which is a community organization, have been tracking racist attacks, hate crimes, and racist policies against South Asian, Sikh, Hindu, Muslim, and Middle Eastern and Arab Americans. This is also not happening in our recent history as well. I have a follow-up question here, right? So the fact that there is a spotlight now on anti-Asian racism is if there's something that is new, that's probably it, right? Because this is rare. Like, Asian Americans have long complained or have long been shouting about their experiences of racism in this country. But nevertheless, their experiences as racialized people are often forgotten, unacknowledged, neglected, or if considered at all, they're often minimized, right? So can you say something about that a little bit, about the Asian Americans' racialized and racism experiences and how it's often, I guess, ignored?
Yeah, I don't know, Josh, if you have an answer to this, but I can take a stab at going first. I think for me, as a South Asian in particular, our stories are often even erased from the Asian experience as well. As a darker-skinned Asian, people often don't perceive me as being part of the Asian diaspora, and that can be a really difficult experience as well, because when people don't even recognize your identity as part of the Asian experience, then the racism as well that you experience in connection with that is definitely not acknowledged. And I know you brought up kind of post 9/11 and all of that. I think that was a really big experience, I think, for the South Asian communities that I'm a part of this idea that there is this stereotype of South Asians being associated with terrorism, mm-hmm. and also coming from Sri Lanka and from an ethnic minority that was also kind of fighting for liberation in that country, and groups there being associated with terrorism. That's something that has been a big part of my experience growing up, and also watching other South Asian people experience that. And so I think as we've moved further and further away from 9/11, I think a lot of those experiences have sort of been forgotten mm-hmm. and kind of been swept under the rug. One of the things that I found really healing, in addition to being a part of Akapita, I'm a part of a very informal group of other South Asian women. Mm-hmm. We call ourselves Team South Asia, and that acronym is TSA. And it's kind of funny for us because we're like, it's kind of silly, but underneath that joke, right, there's also this history of pain. Because I think when we think about 9/11 and the way that South Asians were profiled by the TSA, being put on no-fly lists, mm-hmm. that kind of thing, there's a pain there. So there's definitely been an attempt to sort of reclaim that and make something silly of it, but also to remember that history.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Nithya. Josh, you have something to add?
Yeah, could I have you restate the question, please?
Well, I was kind of asking about how, you know, Asian Americans have been kind of forgotten in our national conversation about racism, historically, not just, you know, recently, but historically. And if you want to, you know, speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I know that I think, again, going back to lived experience and what I've seen from other Asians, especially in Alaska that I've spoken mm-hmm. with, Nithya touched on Akapita and how that has been such a powerful force for uniting mm-hmm. our Asian community in here, and especially for me, giving me a sense of unity and solidarity. Mm-hmm. I am a half Asian man. Mm-hmm. And I think my mother is from Quezon City in the Philippines, and my father is from Missouri. Mm-hmm. And I think that growing up, I felt like I'm in this limbo of where I'm not really sure where I'm accepted, or I'm not sure how to become accepted. But I always feel like I'm just on the edge of receiving that acceptance. Mm. As a kid, I would always, so many of my friends were white. I felt like the outsider. And from what I've seen, speaking to other Asians in our community, it seems like there is this prevalent feeling of, and as being an Asian in America, that you are perpetually the outsider, but also you are perpetually so close to becoming accepted by our white populace that it feels like you can almost taste it, you can almost feel it, you can almost touch it. And I think that reinforces that that model minority mindset of wanting to conform. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's easy for these things to get overlooked and for Asian Americans to be seen as submissive, to be seen as, oh, well, you're the good minority. Mm-hmm. You're the ones that blend in. And we do. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, we conform to blend into society. Mm-hmm. But as we've seen over this last year, that sentiment is so fleeting. Mm. It can go right out the window as soon as a scapegoat is needed, mm-hmm. as soon as something goes wrong and suddenly all of us Asians are pulled together as being the problem. We're all Chinese now. We're all terrorists now. Mm-hmm. We all just need to go back to our country.
Yeah, so thanks, Josh, for sharing that. And you touched on a couple of things there. You know, one, there's this model minority stereotype, right? This model minority myth, right? You know, all Asians are doing well. They're doing well academically. They're doing well economically. They're doing well in terms of their health, both physical and mental health. Along with the model minority myth is this again myth that Asian Americans don't experience racism, right? It's part of that. And then, you know, you also touched on this idea of proximity to whiteness, right? That, you know, that you know, like the more economically successful we are, academically successful we are, then, you know, then we're good, right? And so then when we talk about anti-Asian racism, when we talk about bad things happening to Asian Americans, it's like a lot of people seem to be surprised and shocked by it. Like, what? You experience racism? What? You're struggling? What? You're not doing well at school? What? You're poor? What? You're undocumented? Right? Mm-hmm. Do any of you want to comment on that a little bit?
Oh, my gosh. Josh, are you going to go?
Oh, no, I have so much to say, so you go first.
there's so much in that. I was just thinking about what you were saying about proximity to whiteness and how people are sort of shocked that Asians are experiencing racism. And one of the things I was thinking about as I was kind of going in my mind, thinking about all of the racist things that I've experienced, a lot of it has to do with this idea of, like, there was so much pressure, I feel like, when my parents came to the United States to assimilate and to, you know, increase our proximity to whiteness and to fit into this idea of what they, you know, thought a model minority was supposed to be. And so I think a lot of, you know, the racism that I experience is like when people see us not being close enough to whiteness and they see these differences. And that experience of feeling like you have to hide the parts of yourself that make you different from white dominant culture is an experience of racism, right? It's an experience of feeling like you can't be your whole self, that you can't show up as your whole self. And that it can be a really painful experience. And I think as I've gotten older and kind of stepped into my identity, I've been doing a lot of thinking about, you know, how can I move away from this idea of assimilation and needing to be, you know, white, and how can I step into that? So, I've been thinking quite a lot about what that means for me and for my family. I was just thinking about the idea of names and our name, traditional names sort of, being changed as a way to kind of fit in. And, I was just thinking about my dad goes by the name Sam. That's not his actual name. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling a friend what his actual name was in school and them just, like, making fun of it mercilessly. And we're like, that sounds like can of poopy. Mm-hmm. And, like, it was so hurtful, right? Mm-hmm. And just recently I have not changed my last name yet, but our last name used to be much longer than it is now. And I recently just kind of re-added all of the other part of our name to my email signature. Mm. And it was such a small, it was such a small act, but it felt like me sort of moving closer to my family and closer to our heritage and further away from this idea of having to be part of this model minority idea.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Nithya, for sharing that. Josh, you have something?
Yeah, so, man, where do I start? This is going to be our show now. We're just going to talk about this. People talk about, like, how they're so surprised that we've experienced racism. They're so shocked. It's like, it seems like everything's always been cool with you. You know, you've always been fine. But it's that they get us early. They get us young. And we suppress it. And there's so many things that I've looked back on, and I'm not just generalizing here because I'm going to spill the tea. we suppress it and we treat it like it's normal. It's so normalized and ingrained in us that we just overlook it. And we think, we see things as, like what Nithya said, the idea of reclaiming your heritage simply through how you sign your name, or that your email has your Asian name now, that's seen as this landmark, as this monumental decision, as this act of rebellion. Mm-hmm. I am Joshua Albeza Brandstetter. Albeza is my mother's maiden name, my Tagalog name. And I wouldn't tell people that. I would go by Josh Brandstetter. I was so focused on on the Austrian side of my heritage, because I thought being Filipino was not cool. It's not cool to be Filipino. It's not sexy. Nobody wants to be Filipino. Joe Coy made this comment about how, like, are you Dr. Asian or Jungle Asian? And it's like, that's like got a lot of laughs, but it does deeply play into this sentiment of how even as Asians, you know, we can look down on each other and we can feel like we're not good enough. And I was so ashamed of my Filipino side growing up as a kid, of how my skin would darken so fast in the sun, mm-hmm. how all the Filipino movies my mom would watch were, I would never want to watch it. I would want to watch like the Hollywood movies with the white heroes, with the thin lips and the blonde hair and the blue eyes that looked nothing like me, but I wanted to be them because they were cool. And I would pull in my Filipino lips. I would tighten them so I would not be me. Because like, mm-hmm. what can I change? I can only change that, so I would change it. Mm-hmm. And now today, even, I still pull in my lips. And even though I'm aware of it and I talk about it all the time, it's just become such a habit because I started when I was like 8 or something and you just do it. But then there's little things. Like I remember being in school and I would always pull in my lips, but I was in algebra class, sleeping through algebra class, of course. And I remember like my best friend talking to the teacher during a break and being like, look at Josh's lips, because they thought I was sleeping. I was laying my head down. They're like, look at Josh's lips when he's sleeping. Mm-hmm. And just them being weird. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to be different, but you can't keep up those appearances 24/7. Mm-hmm. It's so hard. And I think that ties into the billion-dollar industry for skin whitening and how we try to change ourselves. Because even when we're not being physically assaulted, even when Asians are not being knelt on by police officers or Asian Americans are being attacked in their places of work and then told that isn't a hate crime, it isn't racism, even when that's not happening, there are so many small things, from Asian girls at my school being told they're dressing provocatively and they're dressing like a hussy when they're wearing the same school uniform as the white girls because they are more sexualized simply for being Asian. Mm-hmm. Or when a Pacific Islander student in the school actually spoke in his pidgin accent once, mm-hmm. and was told, why are you using that monkey talk? Mm-hmm. Or foreign students that we had from Korea who were told that their food stank. Mm-hmm. Because of all of these small things and what I was called, I was ashamed of even my middle name. And it's been such a long journey for me just to say, no, I'm Joshua Beza Brandstetter. And so, yeah, I make everyone take 2 minutes just to say my name when I show up on a podcast or on a show.
Thank you. Thank you, Josh. Yeah, and Nithya for sharing these personal experiences. And, you know, and we're going to have to take a break right now. But we will continue to personalize this and localize this to here in Alaska after the break. Right now, we're taking a break, though. So you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. This is EJ David speaking with Nithya Thiru and Joshua Albeza Brandstetter about anti-Asian racism. If you have thoughts about anti-Asian racism or if you've experienced anti-Asian racism yourself, call us at 1-888-353-5752. Or if you're in Anchorage, call us at 550-8433 or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. This is EJ David speaking with Nithya Thiru and Joshua Albeza Brandstetter. We are talking about anti-Asian racism. If you have thoughts about anti-Asian racism or if you've experienced it yourself, call us at 1-888-353-5752 or 550-8433 if you're in Anchorage. You can also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So prior to the break, we were just getting, you know, really, you know, personal, sharing personal experiences. So I kind of want to continue with that discussion. So what brought a spotlight to anti-Asian racism are events that happened in other states, right? Like in California, New York, Atlanta, Indianapolis. But do they happen here in Alaska? I mean, you know, Asians are the third largest racial group in Alaska. And both of you, Nithya and Josh, both of you are Asian Alaskans, born and raised here. You went to school here. What have been your experiences here, or your family's experiences, or your friends? Josh, let's start with you this time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So before you cut me off for the commercial break, no. You have to do that, or I will just keep going. Yeah. So we were talking about, how the anti-Asian racism in our community, it isn't always apparent, because I think that, at least in my lived experience, a lot of what's happened has started very young, has started in our education system. Specifically, in my experience, in our private Christian education system, I attended a private Christian school here in Alaska, a very prominent one, a very influential one with a long history in our state, with roots that go all over the state. It's very influential. Mm-hmm. And that was a place that was incredibly formative for me. I attended there for 4 years for high school. And for one thing, that was the first place attending that school was that private school was the first place time I had ever been called the N-word, for one thing, by anyone in a derogatory manner, by anyone in a way that was meant to make me feel less than, but not only being told that by students, being told that by educators, being told that, called that by my coaches, or hearing a Bible school teacher use that term. Mm. And it wasn't just that. I remember a lot of things. I met my wife at that school, which I am thankful for that, that we're still together and that we work well together and all after all these years. But she told me when she returned from a trip to Florida and she sat down in her Bible class and her Bible teacher welcomed her back to Alaska and leaned in and said, "Did you see a lot of gay slur while you were there?" And while that those aren't anti-Asian sentiments, it all comes with the package. And I remember not only being called those things, which I am not black, I am straight, I'm cis, hetero, I am a Filipino-American man, but it doesn't matter, you get called everything. And when I told them, "Hey, I'm Filipino," well, then I would be called a flip-flop. But not only that, I remember being targeted for being a minority, targeted by my coach, because I think I was seen as more vulnerable. I was skinnier and more frail than a lot of the other athletes, and I was often quieter. You know, I was shy back then, believe it or not. And I remember my coach targeting me on road trips and when we would finish a game. And I remember being in my sleeping bag and hearing him say, "Hey, Brandstetter." I remember the hazing, and it was rough. And when I look back on it, which is what I'm trying to get to, when I look back on it, and the other people who were also targeted for this hazing, what do you know? It's the Asians. It's the black students. It's students who would come out after graduating because they weren't allowed to be themselves while they were there. Mm. It's the students who were minorities or in marginalized groups, they were targeted. And it's like we were seen as more vulnerable. Mm.
Thank you so much, Josh.
Yeah,
I understand that's, you know, a lot of these things are difficult to share, so I really appreciate you sharing it with us today. Nithya, do you have something that you want to add?
Yeah, absolutely. As Josh was talking, I was thinking a lot about the idea of intersectionality. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as an Asian woman and also as a queer Asian woman, it's something that I think I am kind of forced to think about a lot. Mm-hmm. And in thinking about some of my own specific experiences with racism here in Alaska, I think a lot of that is connected to my gender and also my sexual orientation. I think as a woman, an Asian woman, I think Josh touched on this a little bit, but the fetishization of Asian women, mm-hmm. the exoticizing of Asian women is huge and something that I experience constantly, primarily from cishet white men. But yeah, it's definitely something that's been a really difficult experience. And I think, gosh, I was just thinking about a few different experiences I've had where I was once at a work event, and a man at this like big event at this table in front of a bunch of people basically made a joke about me being a sex worker in front of all of these people, and then asked if I was affordable. And it was like, you know, I think when you have those experiences and you have them so often, create this defense mechanism where you're like, you want to keep yourself safe and you don't want to push back and you don't want to be that person. And so, you know, in that instance, like, that's a pretty horrific thing to say. And what did I do? I just like laughed it off and just walked away. Right. And, you know, walking down Anchorage Street and someone like exposing themselves to me and soliciting me thinking I'm a sex worker, right? That's happened on multiple occasions, right? So there's, you know, those experiences are really tough, and I think they do intersect with gender as well. And I've also just been thinking about, you know, my own experience in being a queer person. And I think for a lot of people, there's a really big assumption about like what my culture thinks about queerness and being gay. And I feel like a lot of those assumptions are false assumptions. And so, you know, trying to think about how my identities are more in conversation with each other rather than in conflict with one another. Because I think oftentimes people from the outside kind of try to pose this idea of like, oh, you come from this traditional and also backwards culture, right, that, like, doesn't accept gay people, and then you're gay, so you, like, can't be both things at once, right? And people try to make you separate those things out. But for me, as I've grown and tried to heal from all of that, I've just been thinking a lot more about, again, how can those things be in conversation with each other rather than in conflict with one another?
Thanks, Nithya. Yeah, thank you both for sharing your experiences here, growing up here, and also living here in Anchorage. You know, I just want to bring in some studies here that really support, you know, the experiences that you both shared. There was an analysis of the Anchorage Community Survey data that was published in 2013 by researchers at the University of Alaska Anchorage, and it showed that, you know, about as high as 25% of Asian Americans on the survey reported experiencing racism in some form, in some context. And then, you know, more recently, a study that I conducted with a couple of other UAA professors, Gabriel Garcia and Joy Mapaye, we found that about 55% of Asian Americans in our study reported experiencing racism. So, I mean, these are, you know, 55%, that's one out of two Asian Americans reported experiencing recent racism. So, you know, it's obviously happening here in Alaska. And also, I like that you both touched on a very important nuance to the, you know, Asian Americans' experiences of racism, and that it intersects with, you know, other forms of oppression. You know, because the reality is that there are different kinds of oppressions in our world, in our society, in our country, and in our state, right? So, you know, things like racism, sexism, misogyny, anti-immigrant sentiments, anti-LGBTQ sentiments, classism, you know, they all intersect to impact people's experiences. So thank you both for speaking to that a little bit. But now we want to, you know, since we touched on this very important nuance to anti-Asian racism, let's add another one to it. And you both kind of touched on this earlier also. We know that Asian Americans are a very diverse group of people. You know, not only do we vary in terms of our cultures, languages, religions, our worldviews, our foods, right? But we also vary in terms of our phenotypes, you know, our physical traits, what we look like to other people. Which then has a huge influence on how other people see us and the stereotypes that, you know, they have about us. So, you know, so there are very different stereotypes among different Asian groups, which means that different Asian groups may experience different kinds of racism. You know, so do you both want to speak to this a little bit more? Nithya, let's start with you on this one, since you talked about this a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about how to kind of approach that question. Mm-hmm. And thinking about one of the things I want to be careful of is not, you know, like comparing oppressions in a way
sure.
that's harmful.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important to be thinking about solidarity across mm-hmm. Across Asian communities, for sure. Mm-hmm. But definitely, yeah, I think the way that we present can mean that we experience different types of racism. So, for example, you know, as a lot of this anti-Asian racism has been arising as a result of COVID-19, mm-hmm. I would say that that's not a type of racism that I've experienced as a darker-skinned South Asian person, right? Mm-hmm. I don't look like the person that people think are associating with COVID-19, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so I think for me in that case where I'm seeing that kind of racism, I feel like I'm more of in sort of an ally position of being an ally to communities that are experiencing that type of racism. But then again, of course, you know, we talked about, you know, post 9/11 and mm-hmm. that kind of racism that South Asians experienced. And so, you know, that is sort of a very specific to South Asia mm-hmm. and darker skinned Asian experience as well. So there's definitely different types of racism mm-hmm. that arise, but I think, at the root of it all is really this idea of colonization, white mm-hmm. supremacy, that is really at the core of the problem for all of our communities. And so for me, it's really thinking about how do we dismantle these overarching ideas of white supremacy culture in order to further, the betterment of all of our communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. Josh, you have something to add?
Yes, I do think that an important question that needs to be asked when we look at these definitions of like how diverse Asia is. It's like, mm-hmm. it's the biggest continent on the planet, guys. I mean, and then you just call us all Asian. It's like, okay, so what are we talking about someone who lives in Pakistan? Are we talking about someone who is living in Siberia? I mean, that is a massive chunk of land right there. Mm-hmm. And then also, who gets to define this? Who gets to define us? And mm-hmm. when we look back at that, it's a Western mindset who said, okay, you are Asian. All of y'all are just Asian. And you guys are just Pacific Islanders now. You are just Pacific Islanders. And it is such a disservice to these unbelievably diverse demographics. And then also, as growing up from my own lived experience, I never really knew where I fit in because it sounded counterintuitive to me. I was like, well, I'm a Pacific Islander, right? I would be at a potluck. And they're like, we're Pacific Islanders, right? We're Filipino. We're islanders. And they're like, no, we're... And mm-hmm. it was kind of shocking how people jumped to, no, absolutely not. You are mm-hmm. you are Asian. And I'm like, but I mean, it's an island. And so I was like, but it's like these definitions do not encompass us. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, I feel they are a disservice to us. I mean, I was filling out a medical survey for this program, and I looked under the Asian category, and it was very specific. There was no Filipino there. And then in that case, they had like a section in Pacific Islander for Filipino. And so I feel like we are being put in these boxes that do not serve us.
Mm-hmm.
We are diverse. We are Filipino. We are Korean. We are Desi American. We're all of these things. And while I think it's wonderful that we can find unity despite how we have been categorized,
mm-hmm.
I think we need to break free from these boxes. I think we need to be able to celebrate how incredibly diverse our spectrum is, and colonization is just told us, no, that's not how it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think what you both are speaking to are really the complexities of you know, this category, right? This very broad Asian American category. And then, you know, obviously the government also has decided to add on Pacific Islander to that as well. So, you know, that makes it even more of a, you know, diverse group of people. Again, you know, understanding, both of you touched on this, understanding that there is power in numbers, that there is power in solidarity between different groups of people. But at the same time, you know, we have to remember that, you know, with this very broad category, you know, there might be some folks that are, you know, that end up being forgotten or marginalized or overlooked, right? So, for instance, right now, May is Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month. But oftentimes, you know, the Pacific Islander part of it is forgotten. But anyways, we will talk more about, you know, the complexities of anti-Asian racism when we get back from break. Right now, you are listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. If you have thoughts about anti-Asian racism, if you've experienced anti-Asian racism yourself, give us a call at 1-888-353-5752. Or 550-8433 if you live in Anchorage. You can also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. This is EJ David, and I am speaking with Nithya Thiru and Joshua Albeza Brandstetter about anti-Asian racism. So let's get back to our discussion here. So earlier we were talking about how different Asian groups experience, you know, different kinds of stereotypes, and therefore related to that, you know, their experiences of racism are also quite different. And again, I just want to bring in some data here. The Stop AAPI database that has been, you know, really has instrumental in bringing a spotlight on anti-Asian racism over the past year. When we look at that data set, 75% of the COVID-related racism reported in that data set were from Chinese Americans, Korean Americans, Japanese Americans, and Taiwanese Americans. No South Asians reported racism in that data set, and then only 8% of the reported incidents in that data set are from Filipinos, when Filipinos compose 20% of the Asian American population. And together, South Asians and Filipinos compose approximately 40% of the Asian American population. Again, though, as we've been talking about right here, it doesn't mean that South Asians and Filipinos don't experience racism. You know, it probably just means that they're experiencing different kinds of racism because there are many other studies that show, for instance, that 99% of Filipino Americans experienced racism, you know, recently. So it happens. They report it. They probably just experience different kinds of racism. But also, again, solidarity is important, right? Again, there's value in this. And it's important for all of us, not just across different Asian groups, but also across different racial groups. Nithya and Josh, both of you have shared some of your experiences with racism growing up as children, but also, you know, recently, you know, as adults. I want to ask you, how has, you know, your experiences of racism impacted you? You know, not just the racism that you experienced directly, but also racism that you've seen, you know, other people who look like you, your friends, your family, you know, the experiences that they've had. You know, how, if at all, have they impacted you, your well-being, your identity, and so on? Josh, let's start with you.
Well, I think that, EJ, that what happens is it's not any one experience that it's years of small things. It's years of hearing people say that they are going to go to the Philippines to get a wife, or that Asian women will do anything, or that, you know, Asian men, well, you're Asian, so you're good at math, right? Or you're Asian, so you're seen as, and you're emasculated for being Asian. You're Asian, so you're not as attractive. You're not as capable. You're not as masculine. You're not good enough. You're not really a man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all these little things. It's Kung Flu. It's go back to China. It's seeing my fellow students. And I talk about these stories from my private school experience, and I graduated in the 2000s, and I think it's easy to say, oh, well, that was, you know, that was back then, which I don't even think that was really the back then. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, but you hear these things and people think, oh, well, that's in the past. You know, racism is over. We've beaten it. It's not racism anymore. It's something else, but it's not that. But a lot of those stories I mentioned, I touched on earlier, a girl, Asian American student, who was wearing the same volleyball shorts as all of the other volleyball players, was told she was dressing inappropriately and was sent to the office when she was wearing the same thing. Or a young Korean exchange student being teased and being afraid to go to the bathroom when other people were in the bathroom because he didn't want to be mocked anymore. Those stories that I touched on earlier and these now, those are not from the 2000s or the 90s or whatever. That was class of 2015, class of 2014, an anonymous student from the 2010s. This is very present now. And I think all of those things add up. It adds up to, one, creating a sense of your value in society, how you fit in, as being sub-white, but also creating this carrot that you have to reach for to be accepted, to be maybe almost white, of like, okay, well, I can talk more white, I can walk more white, I can be less Asian, I can pull in my lips, I can open my eyes a little wider, I can not use my name, just to try to reach that target of acceptance. And it all adds up into this accordion of just suppression being pushed down. And so I think, yeah, I've said so many experiences. There's so many more I could talk about, but I think it's also important to talk about how we can create real solutions, because people hear this and I think it can become overwhelming. So we need tangible solutions, and there are, and I can't wait to talk about that. I want us to have time to talk about that too.
that might be my next question, but yeah, let's hear Nithya's thoughts first about how it's impacted her. You know, not just, again, not just direct experiences, not just one experience. You know, you can also talk about, you know, perhaps, you know, the accumulative experience, you know, that Josh alluded to, but also like perhaps vicarious experiences that you've seen others and other people, you know, who look like you and you identify with, and what they've experienced and how that's impacted you too. Nithya?
Yeah, absolutely. I think something that's impacted me the most in terms of vicarious experience is seen the way that my parents are treated and the way that elders in my community are treated, for the way that they speak, like their accents, for the way that they conduct themselves, that's really hard for me. And I think it really cumulatively starts to affect your body. Mm-hmm. And I think I've been thinking about that a lot more, my parents' experience and my experience and understanding the intergenerational trauma that has occurred over time and how that continues to affect our bodies, right? Like, just like Josh said, like, even if we aren't actively being attacked, when people constantly are treating us as the perpetual other, right, we're constantly afraid of going to the bathroom and being mocked, right? Or, you know, being told that we're dressed like a hussy because of our identity and our intersecting identities, right? Like, that all builds up and creates this feeling of not belonging, of not mattering, of being afraid. And that impacts how you move through the world moment to moment. And it creates this sort of underlying stress under everything that you do, right? Mm-hmm. And that does affect your body and what you feel in your body day to day. And I've just been thinking about that more and more and what, you know, we can do as communities to address that. But I think it's cumulative. It's just like, I recently had an experience with an organization, actually. It was really a disappointing experience of racism, of not acknowledging racism and not being willing to kind of do some learning and growing around the racism that was happening and the white supremacy culture that was happening. And I remember I was telling a friend about it and feeling like it was like, I was really minimizing the experience and felt like, oh, this is just like one little personal thing that I experienced. But then my friend was like, you know what, like this hurts me too, because I'm seeing you get hurt, and that hurts me, and it hurts all of us as a community when we see one person get hurt. Mm-hmm. I've been, again, thinking about that a lot and kind of going back in my experiences of seeing, you know, my parents get hurt, people making fun of their accents, people, doing all of these things that continue to make us feel like, you know, it doesn't matter that my parents have lived here for over 30 years. It doesn't matter that I was born at Providence Hospital, right? Like, I am perpetually the other.
Nithya, if I could chime in, I thank you so much for bringing that up. I think this really brings to mind the internalization that we often have, that I have had as an Asian American man, how I feel like I have minimized myself. I have lessened myself over the years to be something that could adapt, to be something that could conform. And I think of the beautiful tapestry of what it is to be Filipino. I feel like I have torn pieces of it off to try to be more white and to try to be less me. And I think we build regret. I think we build up regret and build up guilt that we don't need to carry. Nithya talked about minimizing her experience because she's like, oh, it wasn't that big of a deal. And I feel like we minimize ourselves. I think I bear a lot of regret over the heritage that I left unfulfilled growing up. And I think of my Lolo and my Lola and how I barely knew them because I didn't want to know them, because when I saw them, my grandparents, I saw what I didn't want to be as a young Filipino man. And I think about how they passed away 2 years ago, and it was so fast. They lived with us for so long, for over a decade, and then they died so quickly. They were in the hospital and gone so quickly. And my deepest regret was that I didn't spend that time getting to know them, because I hated myself. And I just think of all the young Asian Americans in Alaska who are minimizing themselves right now just to be more accepted. It breaks my heart.
Thank you, Josh. Yeah. Thank you.
Josh, if I can chime in too real fast. Josh, what you just said about like not wanting to know your grandparents really hit for me. I think my grandmother lived with us in Alaska for the last, 10 years of her life, I want to say. And I also had that same experience of like, I didn't want to have anything to do with her. I didn't want to know about her experience. And it wasn't until she passed away that I realized how much was lost from not getting to know her. And again, like Josh said, a lot of that came from just a huge amount of self-hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you both. Thank you both for sharing these things. These are very personal experiences, and thank you for your vulnerability. Actually, I've received some emails here from folks. Again, just to summarize it real quick, you know, a lot of the emails and calls that we've gotten seem to, again, minimize and really trivialize, you know, the experiences of anti-Asian racism that we've been talking about, which, you know, is a point that we were talking about, and how, you know, when we do talk about anti-Asian racism, they're often forgotten or just neglected or disregarded. But however, you know, there are some emails here, you know, that really appreciate both of you for sharing your experiences and your vulnerability, and actually want to know more about Akapita. So I'm going to call on Nithya. Nithya, do you want to say, you know, like a 30-second blurb about Akapita and how people learn more about it and find you guys?
Akapita is, again, Alaska Asian American Pacific Islander and Basie Americans, we are on Facebook. So I think if you type in Akapita, it'll pop up with a Facebook mm-hmm. page that you can join. We have been meeting. We have like a monthly meeting. Josh might actually know these details better than mm-hmm. me. But we have a monthly meeting. Go ahead. It's the first Monday, right?
Monday of every month. And I know we have to close out really soon, but yeah, Akapita, first Monday of every month. Look us up on Instagram and Facebook and or reach out to us directly. We'd love to have you join us.
Mm-hmm. And anyone who identifies as part of that, you know, very big, obviously very diverse group of Asian American and Pacific Islander identities are welcome to join that.
All right. Thank you both so much. And then just, you know, last thing, I know this is asking too much, but, you know, maybe you can give your 30-second last parting message to folks before we have to close out here. Let's start with you, Josh, and then Nithya.
Yes. So, first off, we need accountability for the structures in our government that are in our community, our education and everything that could make Asian Americans feel lesser. We need structured accountability so we can have the data for this.
Uh-huh.
And also, spend time with your Lola and Lolo.
All right. I'm sorry, Nithya. We ran out of time,
but
thank you so much. Thank you all for joining us today at Hometown Alaska. Salamat to our guests, Nithya Thiru and Joshua Brandstetter. Next week, tune in for Kathleen McCoy as she discusses how the conviction of Derek Chauvin for killing George Floyd may impact policing in Anchorage. Our audio engineer today was Dave Emmert, and I'm EJ David. Salamat for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.